From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Naples documentary producer Marina Berkovich recently completed what was probably the toughest interview of her life. A Russian TV network assigned the Jewish-Russian refugee to talk to a notable Holocaust denier who's spending the summer in Florida. He claimed to have a lock of Hitler's hair, and she was to get reaction from him about a recent DNA test showing Hitler's wife, Eva Braun, was of Jewish descent. We'll speak with her about how the interview changed her. Plus, Joel Davis of Port Charlotte was the only U.S. youth representative at the Global Summit to End Sexual Violence and Conflict in London this year. Last year, he was just graduating high school and took some time off before attending college. While working for a nonprofit, he was introduced to the topic. At the summit, he interviewed the likes of Secretary of State John Kerry and actress Angelina Jolie. We'll talk with Davis about his year addressing sexual violence and conflict. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm Amy Tardiff. Our theme today is human rights. Later in the hour, Topher Forges will introduce us to a Port Charlotte teen who spent the last year advocating against sexual violence and conflict. He was the only youth representative from the United States at a global summit in London this spring with Secretary of State John Kerry and actress Angelina Jolie. But first, when Marina Berkovich escaped Kiev, USSR, and landed in the United States as an 18-year-old refugee, she never would have guessed her career many years later as a Naples documentary producer would put her face to face with a Holocaust denier. After all, she calls Kiev the city of denial in a country of denial. Then, this spring, a BBC TV show, which uses DNA analysis to find out more about historical figures, claimed Hitler's mistress had Jewish heritage. They said they had used some of Eva Braun's hair for the test. Berkovich and her husband were assigned to videotape reaction for a Russian TV network. And that reaction would be from one of the world's leading Holocaust deniers who is in Florida for the summer. He claimed to own a lock of Hitler's hair. Joining us in studio to discuss this rare interview and how she dealt with the experience is Marina Berkovich. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live, Marina.
Thank you, Amy.
You can join our conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And we're not going to debate the facts of the Holocaust today. It happened. Today we're going to explore what it was like for Marina Berkovich, a Jewish-Russian refugee, to come face-to-face with a notable Holocaust denier, do her job, and walk away with her head held high. So, Marina, what was your assignment?
Well, our assignment, actually, and it was totally a surprise assignment, and we had to deal with it last moment, was to travel for about 6 hours to interview a person who is visiting the United States and is a notorious Holocaust denier, because a program which was airing that same evening by BBC was claiming that Eva Braun had Jewish roots, not hair roots, but they were actually using her hair found on a brush that used to belong to her, not necessarily hers maybe, but a piece of hair, a strand of hair, to identify her through DNA analysis. And actually, as we got there to the location that we were traveling to, the show already aired and the results came in. And the result was, yes, the piece of hair was found to be Jewish. So,
the mitochondrial DNA was found to have Jewish DNA.
Absolutely, yes.
So, who was the interview for?
The interview we conducted was for a primetime Russian network TV show, which deals in sensationalist reporting. So not surprisingly, they picked this as a topic of controversy to deal with that particular week.
Ironically, where were you when you got the call to go do this?
We were... And perhaps that was the decision-making factor for me to agree to do this, because we were actually attending at the Naples Hilton, the Naples Free Press event in honor of Peter Thomas, who is a World War II veteran and actually a liberator of the Nordhausen concentration camp. And perhaps if I were at a different location, at a different place in time with a different state of mind, I would have definitely said absolutely not. But because we were attending a free press event, I figured that free press means exactly what it means, free press.
Did the network tell you exactly who you'd be interviewing? And did you know he was one of the world's leading Holocaust deniers? Did you have to do some research first?
Well, until that day, I never heard of him. I never had to, thank God, explore the subject of Holocaust denying. Yes, we were told who it is. And then once I was out of the luncheon, I actually did a quick research on the internet, and he is immediately foundable.
What was the first thing that went through your mind?
The first thing that went through my mind, and it goes through my mind every single day of my life, is because I'm from Kyiv. Kyiv is the site of Babi Yar, which is one of the most known Holocaust sites where people were killed in what later became a concentration camp. But the particular event that I'm talking about in Babi Yar is the killing by bullets of the 33,771 Jews in 2 days. Most of them, 30,000 of them, were shot on the first day. And because I grew up there and because my family escaped right shortly before, I always learned about Holocaust by through my grandparents and through my other relatives by basically thanking God that we are not at the bottom of Babi Yar, which is a ravine in the center of Kyiv.
How did you prepare for this interview? And was it different from what you would have normally done for any interview?
Well, traditionally, I don't really do too much of sensationalist journalism. Because this is a very unique opportunity, my husband and I, on the way, as we traveled down to the point where we met with this individual, basically went through a plan that it's an opportunity, actually, we felt, of an unprecedented, just unprecedented proportion. I am not that interested in Eva Braun's origins. I don't really care whether she was Jewish or not, because to me, she's not a person of interest whatsoever. However, it's an opportunity to interview someone who I understand refuses to be interviewed as a normal procedure. And as far as I know, we interviewed him for about an hour. And as far as I know, no one else was able to get an interview of that length with him. I was told as we traveled by the producers from Russia that he is known to throw people out in the middle of the interview if he finds that the direction of the interview takes a different course from what he was expecting. So basically, we planned that I should be as calm and composed as I can and just let him reveal himself. He was on camera. I made him very at home and relaxed at his location. But, you know, I do have a tendency to make people at ease with themselves. And he just gave us all the information that he wanted to give, which was basically his character, his education, his reasons for doing what he's doing, etc.
How did you prepare mentally?
Well, I have to thank my husband because he worked on me for 6 hours that we went there nonstop, just basically. I actually am a person who interviews Holocaust survivors. So I have met throughout my life, and particularly here in Southwest Florida, a very large number of people who have numbers on their arms. So to me, you know, it's a very unusual experience to interview somebody from the denier side. And I just had to, basically all I had to do was in my brain understand why I was doing this and the importance of what I was about to do. And I was not doing this for myself. The way that I was able to get through it is I realized that I was doing it for the 33,771 people who no longer could speak.
From your hometown?
From my hometown.
You can join our conversation with Naples documentary producer Marina Berkovich, who recently interviewed a notable Holocaust denier for a Russian TV network. Our number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org, comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. What simply is Holocaust denial?
Well, The Holocaust denial, as I, you know, basically was researching it, there is a Wikipedia definition on the internet, which is not the best source of information, but for what I know, it's the most Googleable source, and it pops up at the bottom of page one. And it's basically any individual organization that denies that this event actually happened. And there are people who will deny it. It's just like there are child abusers that will deny that they abused their children, even if they're caught. And the people deny all sorts of things. And once a person starts, or person or organization makes it a goal of their existence to do something as dishonorable as denying the Holocaust's existence, you know, if they're doing it, let them do it. The point is that the world is scared to deal with them because it's such a sensitive subject matter. And I think, you know, what I was on the way there, what I was saying to myself to prepare myself mentally was, there is no fear in this. I should not be afraid, because just because he's saying this, I do not want to give him credit by respecting him and respecting his viewpoint. I can give him basically some time to explain to me what his viewpoint is, but I don't have to honor him. I don't have to respect his viewpoint. I could disagree with him as much as I want. It was just not the purpose of what I was going to do. So I think that we should, you know, as far as our fears are concerned, throughout our lifetime, we are put in situations which force us to confront our fears. And to me, because I grew up in an extremely anti-Semitic city, anti-Semitism, I understand it to be a world fact. It happens. It's as old as the world. People always build their hatred or envy of the Jews throughout history through pogroms or however else people express that. In Kyiv, the first pogrom happened in 1133. So people are usually surprised to hear that. But the whole point to Jews who grow up in Kyiv, anti-Semitism is quite normal. It's coming from your friends, becoming abusive, institutionalized form of it, which was practiced and probably still is practiced there to a point, is something that's not to be tolerated. People in America are very blessed that they are never exposed to anything like that, thank God. But to me, you know, fearing was something I decided to forgo of when I was 18, when we took the step to leave the Soviet Union. It was quite a scary experience. So I wasn't going to let this particular person who self-identifies himself as a historical writer. He's not a historian. He does not deal like a journalist in facts and information. He writes his interpretation and his opinion of historical events, which he was not even a part of. So it's from somebody's word of mouth account. As far as I'm concerned, it's the revisionist viewpoint. Maybe perhaps some of the facts are true. When he met with Hitler's secretaries, they probably told him some factual facts about daily habits of Hitler. To some people who find their obsession centering around Hitler and their interest centering around Hitler, that may be fascinating information. But it's, you know, to my mind, it's just as fascinating as, the mindset of somebody who's a current world tyrant. I don't think it's an honorable occupation.
We have an email from Larry who asks, and I'm not sure you can answer this, but it's interesting that he says Europe and Canada have given prison sentences or long ones to anyone who dared to question the official version of the Holocaust, and he wonders if the U.S. should make an exception to the First Amendment to do the same. That's an interesting point, but we don't make exceptions to the First Amendment.
Well, we don't. However, this particular person actually is a persona non grata in several European countries, in Australia. Was actually telling us during the interview on tape that he was no longer welcome in Canada and was deported from there recently. And actually, I believe that this is going to be his very last visit to the United States, because he went through for a long time, explained to us his visa problems. And honestly, I'm very happy, because in the United States, he travels from town to town selling his books and spreading his philosophy.
So he thinks he won't be able to be allowed back in?
He does not think he's going to be allowed back in.
We talked a bit about preparing mentally to meet the man you call with capital letters, the denier. What was your impression of him?
I think he's just an ordinary person. He is old enough to be somebody of my father's generation. But, you know, he did not strike me as anybody out of the ordinary. He could have been a next-door neighbor, very disheveled. His apartment was quite filthy. He himself was, you know, kind of unkempt. And the apartment was so filthy that I actually literally had to declutter the couch that I had to sit him on to be mic'd for the interview. There was no room to move around because everything was boxed in with the boxes of the books he brought in. And he actually met us. He totally ignored Alex during this entire process.
Your husband?
My husband, who was actually the camera person for this interview. And was really very, very much easy conversing with me from the very get-go, from the get-go, as soon as we crossed into the apartment. And his first sentences were all about complaining about how he had to carry these books, unload them, load them. The poor thing. He has to load the books on a truck, travel through the country, through the United States, alone, in the rain and bad weather, from town to town for 2 months. And then he has to pack them up after the event, whatever's unsold, and move on and spend nights in the hotel. I felt that he was applying to my sympathy. I wonder, you know, and I always compare everything to the Babi Yar event. I wonder who was listening to their complaints. They were actually so cruel that if a baby crawled out, they did not waste bullets for babies. If a baby crawled out, if a small child crawled out, they would kill him only then.
How did he react to you other than that?
Well, he, as a person who makes his living around the Holocaust sensationalism factor, He actually is trained to identify Jews. I look very Jewish. The audience cannot see me, but people who see me normally identify me as being Jewish or sometimes Italian. And he, after he became very, you know, at ease with himself and several minutes into the interview, maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes into the interview, in a casual manner, the way he probably normally carries himself, started pointing at me with his hand every time the word Jew came up in the conversation. So that tells me, the gesticulation tells me a lot about a person's character. And I'm trained to recognize anti-Semite as much as he's trained to recognize a Jew.
And he didn't notice anything about Alex, whose last name is Goldstein.
He never knew Alex's last name. I don't believe I introduced Alex by his last name, just by his first name. But we are also very Googleable, so he probably Googled us before I even Googled him.
This assignment began for you because the Russian TV network was interested in reaction from the denier, who allegedly had a lock of Hitler's hair. This was after the BBC TV show called Dead Famous DNA performed a DNA test on some of Hitler's wife's hair and said it proved Eva Braun had Jewish heritage. Articles associated with that TV show say the producer paid the denier $5,000 for the hair he claims was Hitler's, but that it turned out to be fake. Now, the BBC and the show got a lot of flack for doing that. Regardless of the validity of the lock of Hitler's hair, the flack they got was for the lack of journalistic integrity of paying so much for the hair. What do you know, Marina, about the validity of the hair they say was Eva Braun's?
Well, you know, it's very hard to say whose hair it was because this was a brush that was discovered years later, or it was in somebody's possession. That person died, transferred the brush to somebody else. I don't really fully remember the details of the story, but it could have been anybody's hair and that brush. So I don't really, you know, like I said to you, I don't have any object of fascination with Hitler or Eva Braun or their hair. Or their hair locks. So all I know is that this particular denier makes his living off of the Holocaust. He actually probably sold the hair genuinely believing that this is Hitler's hair. However, when I asked him this during the interview, he got so confused. He told me a story and then an embellished story. And as any historical writer, you take history, you embellish history, it becomes your own history, your own personal viewpoint, and then you sell it as the only ultimate truth that the society should learn by. And ignorance and lack of education, of knowledge of facts is our biggest enemy. People like him, like I said, we should not fear them. They're ordinary people. But what actually fails us as a society, that we don't educate ourselves enough about the facts and about all different aspects of the situation to confront people like him in situations as they might come up. It's very good to be in control of your facts and have good knowledge of history so that you would never be in a position of fear and unable to dispute any claims by people like him, because all he does is just he creates sensationalism. This is his way of earning a living. He invents and reinvents.
We have a tweet from Mary who called you very courageous, and she's glad that you as a courageous woman have the support of a loving husband. You and your husband, Alex, he was the videographer for the interview, provided us with a clip from the interview. We do want to give the denier a bit of a voice here. Here is Marina Berkovich asking the denier what he thinks of the news that Eva Braun was of Jewish descent.
How do you think the rest of the Nazi leadership would have acted had it been established at that time that Eva Braun had Jewish blood in her?
I think that it would have made no difference. There would have been a certain amount of grumbling. There's a parallel case here. One of Hitler's cooks, his dietitian, Marlene Exner, it turned out that she had Jewish blood. And Martin Bormann, who was very close to Hitler, began agitating that Marlene Exner was now a security risk and she had to be put outside. She had to be excluded from Hitler's presence and certainly not put in charge of preparing meals for Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler said no. He wanted her retained. And she stayed as his dietitian, his personal cook, until the end of the war, and she was taken captive by the Russians at the end of the war, and she vanished in Russian captivity, I think. But there's a very well-known case, which is documented from Martin Bormann's own papers. I don't think it would have made any difference. Hitler saw the Jews no different. Repeatedly, he intervened to stop things happening. In 1938, for example, at the time of the famous Kristallnacht pogrom, it was Hitler who ordered it to be stopped. And again in June 1938, 5 months earlier, when Dr. Goebbels began his first pogrom against the Jews, the intervention came from the Berghof, from Hitler's house. This had to stop immediately. The historians never tell you this. I'm going to tell them this. I have the documents from the Moscow archives. There's no question. I'm right.
That was the man we're calling the denier today, being interviewed by Naples documentary producer Marina Berkovich about the news that Hitler's wife, Eva Braun, was of Jewish descent. We're talking with Berkovich today about how she, a Russian Jew who fled Kiev at the age of 18, dealt with conducting that interview. You can join our conversation, but we're not debating the facts of the Holocaust. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. What do you believe now after talking to him about the hair he claimed to have that was Hitler's?
Well, he says that he was actually able to procure a strand of Hitler's hair from Hitler's barber. He probably has met Hitler's barber. I mean, he's interested. He's met a lot of people who knew Hitler personally. That's his point of fascination. So he probably has purchased a strand of hair from somebody, you know, from the barber. Who knows if it was Hitler's hair? Who else can we compare by DNA? Although the BBC program actually was able to find somebody who claims to be Hitler's son. So now maybe there's going to be some point of reference here for DNA analysis, but I'm really truly not fascinated by anything that comes out of the Eva Braun strand of hair or Hitler's strand of hair.
So he's been in Florida for a number of months, perhaps?
He is still in Florida.
He's still in Florida. Where will he go when he leaves?
He purchased a home in Scotland, and he will be leaving in Scotland, living in Scotland, and hopefully not traveling too far from where he lives anymore.
But he's going on taking people on a tour.
He makes, from what I understand, he makes a supplemental living by actually having guided tours through concentration camps for whomever it is that wants to join his version of history.
Well, what does he tell people happened there?
I did not delve into that, okay. But he did mention to me that he will go to Majdanek. And to me personally, that was, you know, life is a very interesting place.
You've been there.
I As a Jew from Russia, Russia, like I said, is the Soviet Union, rather not Russia. As I said, it was a country of denial. I mean, nobody ever admitted to the statistical numbers of Russian victims during World War II, and particularly Jewish victims. The quantities of victims were not known at all. So I found myself in Poland at the age of 15. A long story, I'm not going to go through it right now, but as part of that visit, I actually ended up visiting Majdanek. And what happened to me after that visit, that was a life-changing experience for me. And when I returned to the Soviet Union, I actually stood in front of my class, which was about 40 people, and wanted to tell them, to enlighten them about this experience. And as soon as I pronounced the words, I was in a concentration camp, there was laughter, and there were hateful anti-Semitic remarks, and that was the end of my education of my classmates, and I decided to leave the Soviet Union.
Wow. We have a question. A tweet from Lindy who says, we have our own denier here in town who showed up at a meeting she was at, and she's asking, help her know what to do next time. Any advice?
Well, I think that the best advice that I could give to anybody here locally in Southwest Florida is please contact the Holocaust Museum in Naples. They have all the tools, and they will be able to help. They deal with situations of different sorts, and I'm sure they're very well equipped. If not, if you want to remain anonymous, you can always contact the Washington Holocaust Museum. They have the expertise. And of course, if not that, then there is also Yad Vashem in Jerusalem.
Did you surprise yourself with how you behaved with him? You say you turned the cat and he turned into the mouse.
I absolutely was shocked by my internal calmness. When I heard my voice just now, I do not sound as calm as I thought I was. But inside myself, I had like basically everything subsided except for the fact that I had to do it. In my family, there is a history. My grandfather was in the concentration camp during the war and survived by pure coincidences and miracles. And I felt like I was finally reaching a point throughout my entire life. I was being prepared maybe for that moment by the stories that I've been hearing from people who lived through the experience. In fact, something I did not mention in the article, I don't think, but Alex and I are working on a film for the Holocaust Museum here locally, and we actually heard a lot of the interviews of the Holocaust survivors who live in this region. Some of them, in particular Abe Price, who just died earlier this year, he lost 300 members from his family. These are unfathomable numbers. To have somebody say very casually, I don't think that, you know, I don't like the, which is the denier said this, I don't like the word Holocaust. I don't think the numbers are correct. Maybe only 1.5 million people died. So to be as dismissive to me, I mean, this person, the denier, I lost any kind of objectivity from my point, but I did have to behave in an objective way to get him to open himself up so that people actually will have a chance to hear his viewpoint and to see him for himself.
And what will you do with the interview? I mean, you already had to give it to the Russian network, but are you planning something else?
Well, I would. I still need to think about how it is I want to present it to the civilization, but I will have something that I will do with it.
And lastly, very quickly, you told me you did something to document the fact that you were with him. What did you do and why?
In the middle of the interview, I realized that people will deny the fact that I was there. So I actually bought his book, had him autograph, and had my husband take a picture of the two of us as the denier was handing me this book that he just autographed for me. So if anybody wants to deny it, it's an undeniable fact now that I was there.
Thank you so much for sharing your story today, Marina.
Thank you, Amy.
Marina Berkovich is a Naples documentary producer. She and her husband videotaped an interview with an infamous Holocaust denier as an assignment for a Russian TV network. Information is online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. We're taking a short break. When we return, we'll meet a Port Charlotte teen who's advocating for an end to sexual violence and conflict on a global scale. I'm Amy Tardif. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.